You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass, and it feels nice to get into a rhythm of saying that. And joined with me, as always, is Marcus Barahal. Marcus, what's going on, buddy?
Josh, it's good to be back. Episode number two of this new era, this new day. It has fully dawned, and we are in control now. We have the power.
Exactly. It's our Jeter podcast. I want to keep doing, like, because originally it was Jordan year when it was people's 23rd birthday, and now I'm starting to see Kobe year. So we're going to do that. This is our Derek Jeter podcast. Next time will be our Chris Paul podcast, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So a lot has happened with the Nets the last couple days. We are going to get into the Spencer Dinwiddie extension, and I will celebrate. I have my celebratory kombucha with me. We'll also talk a bit about the Nets' impressive victory over the Jimmy Butler-less Philadelphia 76ers, three in a row for the Nets, and talk about all that comes on with that exciting game. But first, let's, Marcus, I'm going to throw it over to you. Thoughts on the extension? You saw Woj and Shams kind of tweet simultaneously about it. What was your gut reaction there?
I think it's a good move, was my first thought. It was a good move, but one that confused me a little bit, just because D'Lo isn't locked up. So I was a little, not confused, more just like interested in the fact that they would lock him up. Him being Dinwiddie before they locked up D'Lo, if they plan to lock him up at all. I think that the contract's super reasonable. I mean, it's about 10-11 per year. Only 10.6, I think, in the first year, which is definitely a jump from what he would have been making had he not signed the extension, but is not crippling in any way, and is super reasonable. And then after that initial thought, get this, I had a second thought.
No.
Very rare, but I continued to think, and I said, I wonder if this makes him more likely to be traded or less likely to be traded now that he's on a longer-term contract. These are all questions that came into my mind. What did you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, first of all, let's unpack that. I was very happy, first of all, because I think three-year deal, obviously Spencer Dinwiddie has the player option for his third season, so it's good for him because if he continues this and it really outperforms expectations, he has the chance to hit the open market when he's still close to or in his prime at 28 years old. So good deal for him. He's securing some money. Nets get a value contract, at least for the next couple of years, because Spencer, the way he's playing, is definitely worth more than $11 million per season. So very happy with that. And I think the D'Angelo Russell question you bring up is interesting. I mean, he's always seemed to be a bit in limbo and saying, hey, like, we could have D'Lo as our guy of the future, but we're still not sure if we're going to commit to him. But regardless, we want to make sure Spencer Dinwiddie's on this team, either as the stopgap point guard, someone who we think could be a sixth man of the year candidate. So good for Sean Marks in saying, hey, even though the D'Lo situation is still in limbo, let's take this opportunity, lock up a really good player in Spencer Dinwiddie, who's been in our system for a couple of years, has really developed under Kenny Atkinson. And, you know, he's a big success story for the Nets. And I think it's great to see him back in the fold. He's one of my favorite players. We'll get into his big game. And, you know, the guy also with, I think I'm going to buy some of his sneakers, that sneaker project he's doing, hashtag audience of one. I think it's really awesome. And he's become a really marketable player for them over the last year or so.
Yeah, even just like he tweeted, I think, like, good to be back or something along those lines.
I'm home.
Yeah, I'm home, which is
That broke it. I think that was before Woj, right?
Oh, he had the scoop.
Yeah, he scooped himself.
Wow. Rare to see a self-scoop, but we appreciate it here on the Locked On Nets podcast. And I think that Twitter accessibility is something that the Nets definitely have with him and with Dudley. It's like a very approachable team, and I think Dinwiddie is a very good, if not a face of the franchise, obviously. I don't know if he's that talented. He definitely has the personality, at least, for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, and he complains like he's a star, so it has it all going.
That's a big part of it, you know?
It is, yeah. He's like, they said to him in the offseason, said, Spencer, if you want to get this contract, one, work on your game, two, just, you know that when you really complain a lot? And he says, yeah. He says, just keep doing that. Keep stepping up your game, continuously evolving. And that's what he did.
He probably, like, watches tape of himself complaining, like, sees little ways he can improve. Just maybe, like, form his arguments better or different things like that.
I could have been a bit more expressive on my reaction.
Could have gesticulated a little more.
Mm-hmm. He's like practicing with like Monty McCutcheon in the off season.
I'm picturing him now in like a boxing gym, and he's like verbally sparring with someone. They like have the gloves up, and he's just pitter pattering his way.
I could see that. So getting back on track here, very excited for Spencer. I think we're both really happy for him, and it's going to be interesting to see. Do you think his production? I mean, will fall off a bit. I know that really a big part of his game has always been having that chip on his shoulder, and especially when he plays teams like the Bulls and the Pistons, he just wants to go at them and cut their throat because he hates what they did to him. I think he has a picture of Stan Van Gundy on his nightstand that he just like is throwing darts at every night. So is that chip gonna go away, Marcus? What do we think?
That's a good question. I think there's a lot of guys who have the mentality where once they get paid, they kind of take their foot off the gas pedal, and they're just kind of playing for that contract, and then once they get it, they kind of ease up. I don't think Dinwiddie's that kind of guy. I think to get to where he's gotten to, he's had to work extremely hard, obviously, being cut, being in the D/G League. I think that he'll be the type of guy who will continue to push and to keep trying to get the next accolades. Like, I think if he plays to the level of Sixth Man of the Year this year and doesn't get it, I think that could be another thing. Like, there's always going
to
be another.
Yeah, there's always, he'll find a chip to kind of establish, and you know,
yeah,
he's the type of guy. He won the Skills Challenge last year. Every point guard in the league's trying to take his throne, and he's I hope he defends that this year. But I think it's great for Spencer Dinwiddie, great for the Nets as well to lock him up and get a good value contract for a player that's really exciting. So we'll take a quick break here on the Locked On Nets podcast. And coming back, we will talk about one of the reasons why Spencer Dinwiddie got that big contract, his excellent game against the Philadelphia 76ers. Next.
Guys, if you're like me and possess the unfortunate combination of having terrible circulation, having moved to Arizona for 4 years, and then having moved back to New York, by which point your resistance to the cold was relatively non-existent, may I recommend Action Heat? Action Heat makes the world's best battery-heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. Control your environment with Action Heat. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. Those are great, by the way, if you haven't tried this out. Really, really love them. They can reach temperatures of up to 135 degrees and are powered by a rechargeable 5-volt lithium-ion battery that lasts up to 12 hours on each charge. Action Heat batteries can also be used to recharge your phone or any other gadget while you're wearing them. Pretty useful. Perfect for any family member or friend on your holiday gift list. Great for anybody who works outdoors, skiers, snowboarders. Action Heat clothing provides toasty warmth and comfort for your whole body, including heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and even undergarments like heated base layer shirts. Ooh, sounds excellent. And long johns. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat. Action Heat is available for both men and women, and they have great new styles and models just released for this 2018-19 winter season. Make winter activities more enjoyable with a blast of warmth. Action Heat is the perfect solution to keep you toasty and warm even in the most frigid winter weather, which we are about to get a lot of in New York, so be sure to check out Action Heat.
Segment 2 here on a Friday/Saturday edition of Locked On Nets podcast. Let's get into the Nets' third win in a row, a very impressive victory on the road over the Philadelphia 76ers, who did not have Jimmy Butler, and Nets win this one 127-124. The game was a bit further out of reach, but Philly had a last-second comeback led by Landry Shamet, who was just bombing threes. And even the Nets couldn't blow this one, so it got a little close. I was almost going to have a panic attack, but the Nets did their job. They secured the bag and closed this one out. And big story is Spencer Dinwiddie, 39 points, a career high off the bench. Second 30-point game in a row versus Philadelphia. And the man was just unstoppable against Philly.
Yeah, I mean, he started off like he was pretty good, but then the third quarter, I think, was where he really exploded, and he was just driving hard, and he had a couple like heat check threes. I think Ian Eagle even called it out at one point in the broadcast. But just, it was really good to see him kind of attacking with reckless abandon, and he got a good amount of calls, but I don't think he was worried about it. Like, I think he was just kind of driving to drive, and if he got a call, he got it. And that's the mentality I think he should have.
Absolutely, that Mamba mentality. And yeah, he was absolutely fantastic. The one play that really stands out for me is he had, this was already when he had gone on that big run. It might have been early fourth quarter. He had the ball switched on to Joel Embiid, and the shot clock's winding down, 5-4-3, and he starts his drive from the three-point line, and just his first step is lightning quick and was able to, I think he started the drive with 2.5 seconds left in the shot clock, able to beat Embiid for a layup as time expired. So such a great move. His first step is so impressive to me, and obviously he has those ability to rein in threes where he's can be a bit inconsistent, but when he gets going, he can hit those really deep shots off the dribble. It's what makes a lot of point guards in this league so special. And obviously, he's nowhere near these guys, but Steph Curry, Damian Lillard, those are all shots that those guys hit on a frequent basis. So it was great to see Spencer have that kind of night.
Yeah, the outside shooting is definitely a plus, but to me at least, the big draw for his game is that when he drives, he's kind of able to contort his body through like the thickets of defenders and kind of almost like water, just kind of fill whatever space
he's in. He's a waterbender.
Yeah, exactly.
He's Avatar. His nickname should be Avatar.
I'll tweet that at him.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. But yeah, great game for Spencer. 13 of 14 on free throws. And really, the Nets as a whole, great free throw shooting game for them, 37 of 43. And they needed they needed to make all those free throws because Philly, again, had that furious comeback. But Spencer knocked in, I think, 6 in a row at the end. Alan Crabb was 4 of 4. Ed Davis also going 2 of 2 at the line. Those 10 free throws, the Nets make all of them. If they miss one or two, Philly has a chance of getting back in that game. So, but a really great win and great execution on the Nets. I think Alan Crabb had a great game. Rhodey Kurucz, my boy, had a really good game. And Marcus, curious to, you've only been with us for a short time. So what are your thoughts on Kurucz? Because he's someone that's a bit of an unknown for people that aren't in the immediate Nets circle and also didn't study abroad in Barcelona like myself.
Of course. I've been to Barcelona, but Monday nights, but I haven't studied there for as long as you did, of course.
Of course.
In watching Kurucz, I thought his length was what was most impressive. The Nets had one lineup at one point, and the Sixers did as well at the same time, where there were no bigs. I think the biggest guy for the Nets was either Kurucz or Rondé, and for the Sixers it was, I think, Ben Simmons at the time. Mm-hmm. And so in that lineup, I thought he was super effective as either a 4 or 5, depending on however you want to determine it, but just he was able to attack without any fear in any regard, really, of who was going to come up to try to contest his shot, because he was, he might have been the longest guy on the court at that point. The only thing that gave me a little bit of pause was in that last hectic scramble with the Shamit stuff, he had that one bad turnover.
That was really bad.
And then on the sideline, he got away with it, but he was on one leg, like kind of throwing it while he was falling out of bounds.
The Nets always struggle with that. Like when they're inbounding the ball and they just kind of deer in headlights look and they get it in, they're like, okay, like foul me. And the other team just tries to wrestle the ball away. So
it
got close for comfort, but I really like what I've seen from Kurucz. He obviously had that really nice spin move and one in the first half, which got everyone going. And he had a couple plays late where Ben Simmons trying to post up and get position, entry pass goes in, and Kurucz is able to do a decent job of just using his length, poke the ball away and force a turnover. So the guy makes stuff happen. You know, he's still a rookie. He's going to make those bonehead plays, but I really like what I've seen from him. I think he's a promising guy that the Nets have found. Let's talk a little bit about D'Angelo Russell, because he had a solid game to finish with 12 points, 7 assists. He wasn't really making a lot happen, not really getting to the basket that much, had a couple of turnovers, but decent overall. And he only plays 22 minutes, understanding that Spencer Dinwiddie was on fire and you can't take him out. But any thought there, Marcus, if Kenny Atkinson should have played Russell with Dinwiddie? And what do you think of D'Angelo only getting 22 minutes on a game where he was solid?
Yeah, I thought it was super interesting. Russell wasn't bad. I thought he was fine. He wasn't like great or anything, but he shot 5 of 10. He was 2 of 4 from 3. I would have liked to have seen, at least at the start of the fourth quarter, maybe trying both of those guys together. Because obviously you're not going to pull Dinwiddie in that spot when he's as hot as he is, but I thought there was definitely a chance to try to see if Russell could get it going also, and then maybe to at least take some of the burden off of Dinwiddie to keep him
fresh. There was a stretch where Dinwiddie got tired, right? It looked like he was just dragging and there was no one else on the court that could create their own shot.
Yeah, he only played 30 minutes, but they were definitely backloaded in that second half, like in that big third quarter in the fourth. I would have liked to have seen Kenny try both of them together.
Yeah, no, I think that going forward, it's something that the Nets need to experiment with, especially without LeVert. You have to at least see what you have with D'Angelo and Dinwiddie playing together. And I think it makes sense to keep the starting lineup the way it is because Joe Harris has played well. Alan Crabb, who we'll talk about also, has really caught fire recently. We'll see how long that lasts. But as of now, the starting lineup's clicking, so don't want to make any changes. But at the same time, we do have to see if Spencer Dinwiddie and D'Angelo Russell can play together because Spencer's going to be a long-term part of this team based on his contract extension yesterday. And now we just need to figure out if D'Angelo can be a piece to the puzzle as well.
Yeah, I wonder if that extension will signal anything in terms of who's starting or the minutes divide. But I think Kenny's pretty much just ridden the hot hand to this point, which I saw Jared Dudley, to bring him up again, he tweeted about, he was getting some tweets at him asking why D'Lo wasn't playing and stuff like that from fans. And Dudley kind of was just like, oh, did you see like what Spencer was doing? Like, how can you take him out? Which I agree with.
Yeah,
and I think that's probably the best move to win games. But the only question is, do the Nets want to win games at this point? Which it seems like they do, but at a certain point, you kind of have to take a look in the mirror.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, we're only 2.5 games out of the playoffs, and Caris LeVert, good news on this from The Athletic's Michael Scotto, who had an article about Spencer Dinwiddie's extension, made a note that LeVert was doing a charity event where he took, I think, 170 Brooklyn families and kids to the premiere of the movie Bumblebee, so great job by Caris. And he was walking around without a limp, no walking boot, just wearing sneakers, looked good, and just wanted to watch some Hailee Steinfeld and Niall Horan.
Yeah, I've heard good things about the Bumblebee movie. I saw a commercial where they said it was 97% fresh. That shook me.
Ooh, I might need to check that out.
Yeah.
I like both of them. I like Hailee Steinfeld, and also I respect One Direction, so.
Same.
Well, yeah, we'll see. Take a quick break here and come back with segment number 3. On Locked On Nets, continuing to dive a bit deeper into the Nets' victory over Philadelphia. Welcome back to Locked On Nets, segment 3. Let's talk about some of the other guys on this Nets team that had an impact. Joe Harris with a solid game, 14 points, 5 of 9 shooting. Alan Crabb, sorry, with a cool 20 and hitting 4 threes. Marcus, what were your takes on the 2 shooters on the Nets?
With Crabb, my biggest thing was that he looked super confident anytime he shot the ball. Like, there was just a look in his eye. He had a couple, or one at least, I remember, in the corner where he was kind of, like, looking at the bench after he shot it. And he should be because he's now, I think, 9 of 13, if my math checks out, over the last 2 games from 3, which is obviously red hot. And he's a great shooter, so he should have that mentality. And I think that a lot of shooting is confidence, so if he keeps that up, there's no reason he should slow down.
Yeah, the Nets need to try to trade him ASAP. I want, like... Sean Marks to show his stats to rival GMs and then just cover up the field goal percentage so they can only see the 3-point percentage.
To show like, the last 2 games, yeah.
Yeah, because he's shooting 6 threes a game at 39% 3-point percentage. I feel like there's teams he can definitely help. Is there anyone that would want Crabb and then the Nets could take back salary where it's either extends for 2 more years at a much lower price or maybe 1 more year at just a little bit of a lower price than Crabb? Because, you know, the Nets don't really have a ton of use for him, and he's not the best player in the world, but when he's hitting threes like this, there are definitely teams that he could help.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, 39%, as you said, on 6 shots, that's a really big asset. I mean, a team that comes to mind as who could use that skill set would be the Lakers, but I doubt that they would want to take on the money for that, especially if they're looking towards next summer as something big. But obviously, like a KCP for Crabb swap or something.
Yeah, with, that some other stuff thrown in. Maybe some sort of 3-teamer in there. I'm trying to think who. I feel like, you know, he would fit in on a lot of teams, and it's not like he gets the best quality looks spotting up from 3 with the Nets. A lot of it's running off screen. So maybe there's a team that would want him. What about this? What about sending him back to Portland for Myers Leonard, who makes 11 million this year, 11 million next year, and then also, who else do they have? They could throw in like no, they can't throw back any Andrew Nicholson. maybe like Seth Curry, something where they could throw it in because Portland's over the hard cap, so they can't take on more than the 17 million that Alan Crabb would send over. But maybe something there. I could see trade one bad contract for like a slightly less bad one and see what we can do there.
Right, yeah. Another team, I haven't thought about any of the pieces yet, but another team that could probably use him would be New Orleans, just because they need wing help and they need outside shooting.
Yep, that's true. The New Orleans Pelicans could use him. They're looking at guys to support Anthony Davis, and I feel like he'd be a decent fit there just because AD is so athletic and can help cover, and they have some pretty mobile big men as well, guys like Julius Randle. That would be interesting to play with Allen Crabbe. And, you know, guys like Randle and Davis are also really good ball handlers, so it's not as much of an emphasis for their guards to create, so Crabbe would fit in well with that culture. But we'll see. You know, he's questionable for tonight's game against the Wizards with a sore right knee. Who knows? Maybe Sean Marks is a trade in the works and wants to hold out Allen Crabbe before he has another, like, 0 for 7 game.
Got to sell high.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to sell high. So a couple other thoughts. We'll go a bit rapid fire here. Shabazz Napier, he hasn't seen time in the last couple games. What do you think of him? I'm surprised that he hasn't really gotten his way into Kenny Atkinson's good graces yet, but it seems like he's being yo-yoed in and out pretty constantly.
Yeah, you would think that the Nets would have more of a need for another ball handler with LeVert being out, but they've kind of just ridden Dinwiddie more than I think they would have if LeVert was playing. Like, him and Russell are kind of just taking over just the two of them, and they're being staggered. They're not playing them as much together as we talked about before. And I think with Joe Harris being back, playing 29 minutes, because Napier kind of has to play preferably the one. I mean, you could play him with a Russell or with a Dinwiddie, but that's kind of a little too small defensively, I think.
Yeah, so definitely not with Russell.
He's not like a very flexible player. So the Nets just kind of don't have the roster to give him minutes. I mean, it's still a little shocking that he hasn't gotten in just for a couple minute stretch or something. But
yeah, well, the Nets are lacking guards. They keep going to the lineups with, it will either be Dinwiddie or Russell, and then like four forwards. So not even like an Allen Crabbe or a Joe Harris. There's been the lineups where it's, you know, the bench unit's been Ed Davis, Rhody Kurutz, Jared Dudley, Damari Carroll, and Spencer Dinwiddie. So it's Spencer Dinwiddie and then four guys. You have Spencer Dinwiddie, Ed Davis, and then three guys that are best position are probably the four. So the Nets do need a bit more balancing of their roster because they are forward heavy at this point, even though none of those guys are super good, to be frank.
Yeah, I guess the minutes that Napier could get would probably come from either Carroll or Dudley. Like, if you wanted to play Napier, Dinwiddie, Kurucs, either Carroll or Dudley and Davis as your
I'd like
your five off the bench. I think that could work, and maybe that'll happen if one of those guys gets traded or if someone gets moved.
Yeah, Carroll struggled 1 of 5 from the field, 0 of 3 from three. He had some
plus
solid rebounds though. Got to the free throw line 4 times. I thought Rondae Hollis Jefferson was terrible, 1 of 6 from the field, forcing everything, just completely out of control with some of these ridiculous turnovers. You know, I love Rondé, and it's great that he's a homegrown guy, but I'm souring a bit on him just because I think this year he's completely regressed.
Yeah, I like him a lot also. That's like kind of the exact player that I just love to watch, like a 3-4 hybrid who can handle the ball, who can defend, but whose jumper is kind of inconsistent, which is where Rondé's been, and he hasn't really worked on that. We were gleeful last podcast when he made the 2 threes, but
yeah,
again, no attempts today, so... on Wednesday.
We'll see. I'm not holding my breath on the Rondae Hollis Jefferson 3-point shooting barrage, but you know, he could surprise me. Let's quickly just want to mention the last play of the game after Ben Simmons scored underneath, and it was the Nets were up by 3 and had to get the ball inbounds.
Amir Johnson scored.
Get the ball, yeah, because Ben Simmons, I think, was the one that missed the free throw. Also, heads up play by Jared Dudley just sprinting to the end of the court.
That was a beautiful pass.
Beautiful, yeah. Who threw that?
I don't remember.
I don't know. He looked like Adam Thielen tracking the ball over his head. It was great. I think, honestly, I was yelling at my computer for Kenny Atkinson to take a timeout there because, worst case scenario, you don't want Philly to have the ball right by the basket they're trying to score on. So, worst case, you could advance the ball, and then if you throw it away, it's fine because they still have to go the length of the floor, and they didn't have any timeouts. But, you know, it worked perfectly, and the Nets have been struggling at these inbound plays, but... this one was it was delicious.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if they drew it up like that or not, but regardless, I mean, to see Dudley leak out and like just full sprint catch the pass and then kind of curl around and evade the defenders, I don't know, I laughed audibly when it happened.
Yeah. He's reliving his Boston College days, his youth.
Mm.
Let's talk quickly about Philly because they're one of the most covered teams in the league, but I think they're super interesting still. Obviously, Jimmy Butler didn't play, but Joel Embiid had an awesome game. I continually am impressed by Ben Simmons. I think just his combination of ball handling and speed and athleticism is so breathtaking to watch. And, you know, a couple of guys on their team, TJ McConnell, solid. Landry Shamet was good. And Korkmaz really impressed me also.
I was just going to say, Korkmaz was the guy who jumped out the most to me. Yeah. 18-6-3 with three steals. That's really good. He was 8-14. I mean, he was efficient. He did everything you could want.
Yeah, he was crafty. He had that one play where he did like a he faked passing and got the defense looking, and then but missed the floater. But he has some moves. He has a good touch also. I know that I guess when he was drafted in 2016, I believe he went 26th overall. But there was talk throughout the season that he could have been a lottery pick, but fell off there. But he has good size, good feel for the game, and I think they found a good one with him.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be a big part of their rotation. I wonder if they keep him in the starting lineup when Butler comes back and move Chandler to the bench. I don't know who's going to be their fifth guy there.
Yeah, I feel like, I think Korkmaz will be better just because I feel like Wilson Chandler is a solid player, and I like him a lot. I think he's always been underrated, but his three-point shot, it's been good this year, but it can be inconsistent at times. But he, I don't know, he's a versatile defender, so I think maybe it makes sense to go with that lower usage player in Furkan Korkmaz, but two decent options there because both guys can switch a little bit and give you some versatility at the fifth starter position for Philly.
Definitely. Another thing that jumped out to me was just how dominant Embiid was. I mean, obviously, I think we all know how good he is, but just any time he was single covered in the post, it was either a basket or an and one or free throws at least. I mean, the Nets had some success early on when they were kind of sending either full doubles or just like having a guy flash down to get in his vision. But any time they left him alone, it doesn't matter who he was guarded by, whether it was Allen or Davis, he just kind of was able to get where he wanted.
Yeah, he's so tough to stop, and he always kills the Nets. And you know, he is. I like that he wasn't taking as many threes. He was 2 of 3 from three, but there are games where he takes 7 threes and really just throws them up every time he has the ball and is like semi-open at the top of the key. So I think getting back to his post-up game is huge for him because even though it's pretty inefficient for most players, he's just so strong and skilled with his footwork that it makes it a huge task to stop him. So I'm a big Embiid fan. I think he did a really good job in this game, and I'm excited to see kind of how he progresses. Does he have another ceiling he can get to over the next year or so? Can he continuously hone his three-point shot and hopefully stay healthy because he's a joy to watch on the floor?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how it translates in the playoffs because I know last year he kind of struggled against the Celtics, against Horford and Baines, so I want to see if he's taken that to heart, kind of like we talked about with Dinwiddie where he has a chip on his shoulder again.
Yeah, that's when Al Horford, I think, became my favorite player because it looks like Embiid should just destroy him, and he was just, for whatever reason, Embiid just could not move Horford in the post. Like, Horford just stood his ground so well, so I think Al Horford's super underrated, and my roommates will hear me say jokingly that Al Horford's the best player in the league, and I'm not saying if I really think that or not, but it's open to interpretation.
It's a good guy. I remember when I worked at the NBA, I like logged, there was like footage where they like went to his house, and it was like him and his whole family just kind of like talking. It was very sweet. He seemed like a good dad and a good husband.
Yeah, he seems like a nice guy. Is the aunt, is it, no, it's not his aunt. Is his sister or is his wife the one that's always talking on Twitter, like blowing people up when people are mean to Al Horford?
I'm going to guess his wife. I think his wife was like Miss Dominican Republic.
Miss Universe, maybe. Yeah. Good for Al Horford.
Yeah.
So I don't know how we got to this point, but we'll wrap it up here. Great win for the Nets and Spencer Dinwiddie. Don't want to overlook any of his stellar game because he really was phenomenal. I think best performance by far by Spencer in a Nets uniform. And he gets rewarded with a contract extension the next day. So hopefully that momentum continues tonight when the Nets play the Washington Wizards and go for 4 in a row. Marcus, anything before we sign off here?
Just one small note about the Dinwiddie extension that I read. I think it was on The Ringer that because of when he signed his extension, he can't be traded basically until June 23rd, I believe. So we are getting a full season now of Spencer Dinwiddie. Woo! It's official. He can't be traded till the end of the year. So I'm looking forward to that.
That is beautiful. Love to hear that. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. Tweet at us. Give us feedback. How are we doing? How's Marcus doing?
Vote in my poll.
Vote in his poll about the water fountain home.
Water cooler.
Water cooler in home, yeah. Which it shouldn't even be a poll because it's so obvious that it's no, but I know that he does, so give him some pity yeses. Oh, you don't.
I'm on team no, and I'm being vindicated right now. Last time I checked, it was like 28-2 in the votes.
Yeah, well, hopefully the Nets get off to a 28-2 lead tonight against the Wizards. We will be back over the weekend with another episode. And until then, take care and go Nets.
Go Nets.